from KCRW and KCRW.com. I'm Evan Kleinman. You're listening to Good Food. It's 5:30 in the morning, a truly ungodly hour for those of us who eat for a living. And we're starting today's episode of Good Food in the car, because we're going on a road trip. Me, I'm Evan Kleinman, my producer, Jillian Ferguson, Mr. Baja himself, Bill Esparza, and a friend who's also a photographer, Juana Marian. We're all driving to Baja, and we thought you might like to come along with us. What do you say? In Southern California, the influence of Mexican food is a no-brainer. But in the last year, it's Mexico, not Spain, not France, not even Brooklyn, but Mexico that's garnered the attention of the best chefs around the globe. Rene Redzepi of Noma is so taken with tacos that he's helping his sous chef open a taqueria in Copenhagen. We're glad that the rest of the world is catching on because we've known all along how good Mexican food is. To get a taste of the real deal, we drove south through the San Ysidro Gate to Tijuana. Our first stop, of course, is the Mercado Hidalgo. It's an enormous open-air market where vendors sell everything from produce to piñatas. Chef Javier Plasencia is one of those unusual chefs who has a foot on each side of the border. His family owns restaurants in Tijuana, including the acclaimed Mission 19, as well as Romesco near San Diego, and Finca Altozano in the Valle de Guadalupe. Hi, Javier.
Hi, hello.
So great to see you on this side of the border.
Well, yes, it's nice to see you as well.
Tell us a little bit about your cuisine. What kind of food do you make across your different restaurants?
Well, we're cooking with all local products that we have out here in Baja California. I started cooking Italian, very Mediterranean style. And now, about 5 years ago, we told ourselves that we wanted to promote more of our local products and our Mexican products. So we took a different route on our menus. And even though some of our restaurants are inspired or Mediterranean inspired, we try to use local products as possible. Mission 19, our newest restaurant, it's 95% all local products. And we get a lot of our stuff from here, from this mercado.
So when you come, how often do you come to this market?
Once a week, sometimes twice a week. I like it because I find new ingredients every time I come. I like to, you know, just spend time, talk to the guys who take care of the stalls here, to talk to the cheese guy. I find friends here, you know, like chatting and catching up on stuff.
Is this market run like the farmers markets in L.A.? Are there actual farmers manning each stand, or do the farmers sell to a middleman who mans the stand?
Yeah, the farmers sell to a middleman, and then each place here's got its own owner, and they have a commissioner. So it's run by a group of people here.
Like a cooperativa?
Exactly, cooperativa.
So it's a co-op. Unlike a fresh market that we're used to, where the farmers come in the morning, set up on tables underneath canopies that can be easily broken down, and then they leave in the afternoon, this is a fixed market. The cars park in the middle, and around the perimeter are a series of fixed stalls. So when you come here, are you mostly looking for produce, or do you also buy chilies here and seeds and dried fruits?
Yeah, so I buy chilies, especially when they come from like Oaxaca, because you take a pasilla chili, it's very, the flavor of it, it's very different, the Oaxacan, from the rest of the country. So whenever I can find pasillas from Oaxaca, I get them here. I also buy seeds like pepitas, sunflower seeds. I buy chile de árbol, almonds, vainilla from Mexico for Papantla. I get my honey from here, which is a lot of these local producers from the Valle de Guadalupe and the rounds, they come with very good honey. I know when they come, it's Wednesday, so I try to come early and get whatever they have best, so I take that. I also get a lot of clay pots, little jars. One of my desserts for Finca Altozano, it's I took the inspiration from a clay pot that I found here. Also, I buy a lot of candy. There's like six really regional Mexican candy places. So I get my camote, yams in syrup. I got plantains in syrup. And a lot of those things that you cannot get, but only here in this market.
Now, this morning we made an appointment to meet in front of the cheese store. Tell us what the name of the cheese store is and who they are and what they do.
Well, it's called Produmex, and they started about 6 years ago. They were very small. Now they've grown into two stores in one place. And now they don't not only sell cheeses, but now they're selling tortillas, they're selling preserves, they're selling olive oils. They've become very local, so they promote a lot of the local cheeses, the cremas, butters, creams, different types of regional cheeses, aged and fresh. And they also have a section of imported cheeses, which is kind of hidden away.
Imported from where?
Holland, Italy, Spain, but it's only a small quantity.
But they kind of specialize in bringing in cheeses from all the different regions of Mexico.
Yes, also from Chiapas, from Querétaro, Guadalajara. So for us here in Tijuana, it's a very important store because we discover new Mexican cheeses. And like I have a cheese cart in my restaurants that only have Mexican cheeses. I mean, we have the wonderful local cheeses, but there's also very good ones in Mexico. So we have aged cotijas, we have a cheddar from Guadalajara, which is very excellent. And Querétaro's got a very, very good cheese section too. So we got all the goat cheeses from Querétaro, which are very, very good.
I'm so curious, your place in San Diego, do you go to the farmers markets in San Diego for that one? I mean, or do you cross-pollinate? Do you bring stuff from Tijuana to San Diego?
I don't go to the San Diego farmers markets a lot because I don't have the time. But I do go to the farms, like Susie Farms, which is only 5 minutes crossing the border. I would love to have a farmers market here in Tijuana. So we're talking to people from the San Diego farmers market to help us create a farmers market here in Tijuana because I think it's time. I imagine seeing a farmer's market with mariachi playing and tacos and burritos and carnitas. So hopefully we'll get that started soon.
Yeah, every time I come here, what I want to do is just buy every piece of cooking equipment I can find and put it in my truck and drive home. It's very seductive.
It is, it is. As you can see, the La Mexicana, now they have 3 little stores here in the market because they're very popular. Especially on weekends, a lot of people from L.A., San Diego, San Francisco, they come and get lots of pans, Mexican wooden spoons. There's tons of things you can get.
And also just unbelievable piñatas.
Beautiful piñatas. And you can get all these things across with no problems.
Thank you so much, Javier.
Thank you so much for coming and enjoying this wonderful market.
That was noted chef Javier Plasencia of Mission 19 down here in Tijuana and Romesco in San Diego. That was a really great start to the morning, but now we are ready to leave the Mercado Hidalgo and we're going to go find some local craft beer. Now I'm in the Nahard neighborhood of Tijuana in a really incredible brew pub called Baja Craft Beer. And I'm sitting here with one of the owners, Ruben Valenzuela. Hi, Ruben.
Hi, how are you?
So happy to be here and so happy to be introduced to this particular craft beer scene. Tell me, how old is it? When did the first sort of outlier craft brewers start?
The first brewery here was a Tijuana Brewing Company 12 years ago. 2 years after that, Cucapa starts in Mexicali, San Diego and Tijuana. They make a good friendship about beer. 5 years after that, we start with a lot of homebrewers here. And right now, maybe 4 years ago, they start like all this craft beer movement.
I find it fascinating because it makes sense that the craft brew movement down here would start from San Diego because that's such a lively beer scene, but it definitely has its own flavor. We just have this amazing experience of you tasting us on a lot of the different beers, and all you beer guys make similar styles, right? You make the classic styles, but the balance just seems to be very different. Why don't you sort of give us an overview of how you think the Baja craft beer movement sort of views itself in terms of flavor profiles?
We have a lot of influence from San Diego, but it's different in the market of Mexico, because the market of Mexico is more like a lager consumption, and it's not open all for the hoppiest beer. That's why in Mexico, there are more beers with a malt profile instead of a hop profile. We usually adopt all the European styles because it's more malty and more balanced, as you said. In the West Coast, every people know is hoppy, more hops.
Yeah, I have to say that I just experienced some of the most beautifully balanced beer I've ever had. Who are some of the your fellow brewers that you really admire, people that you think are doing just an incredible job? And why don't you introduce us to a couple names that we can remember?
Right now, I think the people who is dedicated more for the beer production, I think is Ramory, Monastica, Insurgente, Border Psycho, and Muñeca Prieta. Maybe another ones who follow these guys is Funes and Frontera.
And of course, you have your own production, Baja Craft Beer.
Yeah, we have the BCB beers here, but we only made the beer for the pub. We started as a distribution company.
And that's the other thing I should say is just walking into the pub and not just the taps, but looking through the glass of the refrigerators at all the bottles, I have to say it's one of the most incredible, complete international selections of beer I've ever seen. I mean, you have beers that I never see in retail outlets in Los Angeles. Like, you have a deep selection of Russian River Brewing Company, which is hard to find in LA.
Yeah. You know, as I told you, Tijuana Brewing Company started 12 years ago, but they don't have a lot of people who like it in that time. And when you start with a distribution company, we start making our own market. And our own market need to know about every styles, because, you know, it's very difficult to find what the people wanted. And we need to start with all the styles. We went to San Francisco, we went to Paso Robles, we went all the breweries we can to ask for the distribution of their products in Mexico. And that's why we know almost everybody in California, and we have access for the beers from them.
You know, when I think about Mexican beers, I think about pretty low alcohol, easy drinking beers, Tecate, Pacifico. And they're the kind of beers where you can really kick back and drink a lot of them. The craft beers tend to have higher alcohol. Here in Mexico, do you try and brew to a lower alcohol level because people are used to kicking back with more brews?
We don't think about the alcohol because depend on the style. You know, in the BJCP guidelines or Brewers Association guidelines of the beer styles, we always follow the rules about the beer style.
Where are all you brewers here in Baja getting your hops and your malts?
We import everything from US or from Europe. We want to improve the agriculture industry in Baja also. You can grow the barley, but the barley by itself is not good to make beer. You need to buy a malt factory. The malt factory is not cheap. It's very expensive, and not too many people do good malt. That's why in the future we want to do that, but maybe it's gonna take like 10 years, 20 years. But right now we import everything from US or from Europe.
So, Ruben, we've been mostly talking about the craft beer scene here in Baja, but what's happening in the rest of Mexico?
Oh, the rest of Mexico is also doing their jobs. Minerva, for example, is going to be the third largest brewery in all Mexico. Minerva is in Guadalajara. They make craft beers maybe for 7 years. Also the Tempus Brewing Company. And they make different kind of beers, but for them it's very difficult because in Baja, we are in the border. It's easy for us to get the ingredients, all the malts, hops, and yeast, and all the stuff. But for Mexico, it's more difficult. And they don't have access to the ingredients easily. Right now in Baja, we have the best beers in Mexico.
Now, what about getting some of the craft beers that I tasted today on the other side of the border? Can we get them in California?
Our distribution company will cross the border with that beers in the near future. I was speaking with Robert guys, also with Tijuana Brewing Company and the other smaller guys who are going to increase the production in the next months, and we're going to cross the border. We have all the license. We have a warehouse in San Diego, and in the near future, you're going to find it in the stores and in the bars.
So great. It's been really wonderful meeting you, and so exceptional to get to taste all of these beers. You just like blew my mind, enlarged my world. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here.
That was Ruben Valenzuela, one of the owners of Baja Craft Beer. We've been sitting in his brew pub in the Nahard neighborhood of Tijuana. We'll have information about the beers we were talking about, so you can look forward to them when they're finally distributed. All the information will be on the Good Food blog. Okay, we're back in the car. Next up, Ensenada.
This is Jillian Ferguson, producer of Good Food. Keep up with us all week long on our blog. You'll find recipes, photos, cooking tips, and videos. Go to kcrw.com/goodfood.
I'm Evan Kleinman. Welcome back to Good Food. This is our road trip to Baja edition of Good Food, and I'm here in Ensenada. Traveling with us is Bill Esparza, also known as Street Gourmet LA. Bill is just imbued with the street scene all over Mexico, but in Baja in particular, he has some really incredibly deep knowledge. So Bill, tell us where we are.
We are on the corner of Alvarado and Lopez Mateos in Ensenada, the tourist zone, at one of the greatest street carts on the planet, La Guerrerense.
Now, what does that mean, La Guerrerense?
That means the woman from Guerrero. Sabina Bandera, she's from the state of Guerrero, Mexico, but she doesn't really cook that style. She's the Guerreran, but she does Ensenada-style seafood. And beyond that, she does a style of ceviches and cocktails that really is all her own, that doesn't exist anywhere else in Mexico. Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Bien, bien, ¿cómo estás?
Sabina Bandera.
Sabina's daughter is with us here today as well. Every time I've come here, she's been here. Mariana Oviado. Hi, Mariana.
Hi.
Now, how long has the stand been here?
I'm the third generation. My grandma started 53 years ago. Then my parents, then my mom Sabina, and my father Eduardo has 37 years. And I, more than 20 years I have here.
Your brothers too?
My brothers too, yeah. We start very young. For example, my brother started to being here like when was 5-6 years.
So what's the first prep job that your mom assigns you guys when you're really young and just coming into the business?
Yeah, the first was prepare the tostadas, just serving the tostadas. Then if you are very good in that and you dominate that, then you come to open the clams. And if we are very good in that, then you can now open and prepare the ceviche, open the clams, and you can prepare the cocktails.
Give us an idea of how much seafood you go through a day.
For example, it's every day she made 15 kinds of ceviche. She prepared the cocktails with shrimp, octopus, sea snails, scallops, clams, black clam, oysters. I don't have numbers.
How many people a day do you think you serve off of the stall?
Today it's around, I think that 500 people, 800, I don't know.
And it's not too busy.
Yeah.
What I'm curious about is this style of seafood that your mom and you guys are serving now. Was it always like this, or did it start one way and then change?
No, it changed with the time. Because they, my grandpa's started with just fish, ceviche with clams, with abalone in that time, and the lobsters. And then we innovated with the different seafood. And then my mom introduced their style with the homemade hot sauce, with another kinds of ceviche. Then it's very different how it was in the beginning.
Talk to me about the uni, because when you take the uni and you put it on the tostada, it's not just uni, it's a special preparation.
Yeah, it's the uni, it's cooked with vegetables, that it's onion, tomato, and coriander, and olive oil, just that.
Oh, it's so delicious. It's like, I don't know, it's almost like a kind of caviar on its own, the way it comes together with the vegetables. Some of the seafood that you're using is seafood that I've never had before in the States. Could you describe some of them? Like the clams look really big.
We work with two different clams. One of those, it's the Pismo clam. That is the big white clams with a sweet flavor. And the other is the Chocolata clam. That it's brown with their meat, red meat. And it's with a flavor less sweet than the Pismo clam. The other that we have, it's the huarache, oysters. The name of huarache is because it's very, very, very big. Maybe 2 feet. The other is the black clam. We work with one black clam that it's very huge in compared with other black clams. We use the clams that is in the deep of the sea. We don't use the traditional black clam that is small with the flavor very strong.
What you end up with this dish is you have the crunch of the tostada, the sort of complex saltiness of the uni and the sweetness from the onions, and then you have all of this crisp, very sweet, super fresh seafood on top. And then the sprinkling of gold on top are your mom's crazy salsas. Does she tell you the story about how these salsas came to her? Was it in a dream?
Yeah, unfortunately, I was there when she started with the first hot sauce. It's not in a dream. Just one day, she started just with garlic sauces in olive oil. Like 8 years ago. Then I was here because she's, what happened if I put almonds, nuts, peanuts? She started just with the chilitos de mi jardín, that is the almonds, peanuts, garlic, olive oil, and chile, her from garden. Now she has 16 different homemade hot sauces.
And does she sell all the hot sauces off the cart?
Yeah, she sells.
You know, I'm standing here, it's 3 p.m. on a Thursday. There have to be 50 people surrounding the truck. Everybody's standing, there are no chairs. People aren't even talking to each other. They're just concentrated on what's on their plate, lifting this tostada with its precious cargo to their mouths. Who are the people who come? Do you have daily people who come every day for lunch?
We have some clients that come daily, and others that saw some program in TV. They're a new taste, and they're, oh, I love it. And we have clients for many years ago. We have all kinds of clients, yeah.
Do people ever come off the cruise ships?
No. They had very afraid to eat raw seafood. I don't know why. It's very fresh. It's amazing.
Yeah. And we should say that the seafood that we've been talking about, how local is it?
It's from here. It's totally local. For example, the clams arrived today at 5 a.m.
Incredible. Thank you so much, Mariana.
Thank you.
That was Mariana Oviedo. She's the daughter of Sabina Bandera, the woman who calls herself La Guerrerense, the woman from Guerrero who runs one of the most famous street food carts in the Western world, I'd have to say. Fish tacos are also a really big part of the street food culture here in Ensenada. We know that. We've seen millions of Baja fish taco places in L.A. And Bill Sparza, who's with us and first introduced us to Sabina, is a sort of street food ambassador for Northern Baja. Bill, can you tell us about the fish taco tradition here? Do you have any idea who started it?
Well, it started with the fishermen. There's a huge fishing community here, and you know, there's a lot of also Japanese that came in, and some people say that the tempura technique was introduced by the, you know, Japanese, but really it was the Japanese and Mexican fishermen working together, and this was just a great way to have a little lunch while they were doing their job at the docks.
So they're always fried?
Yes, always fried and battered, beer battered, and you know, that makes sense, right? Fishermen, beer.
Yeah, totally. And then are the condiments always the same?
Yeah, you got to have some cream, you know, this kind of crema agria, they call it down here. And then you got to have a salsa, a little bit of cabbage, some vegetables, maybe a pico de gallo, and, you know, your salsa, and that's it.
And the thing that really amazes me is you think, oh, they're all going to be more or less the same. But it seems like every taco place, the place where they really shine are the salsas.
Yeah, that's the first thing you got to look for when you come up to a stand is the, you know, the produce and the salsa. They got great salsa technique. And of course, the best stands, they use dogfish or angel shark. So they're both sharks. And that's really the best. If somebody uses other fish, it's not so good.
So great. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
Coming up next, just 15 minutes from downtown Ensenada, I'm not exaggerating, lies the Valle de Guadalupe, the Guadalupe Valley. We're headed there next to talk to a winemaker and to check out the local restaurant scene.
Make a donation of just a dollar a day and you can join one of our exciting and exclusive angel clubs. Choose from music, books, DVDs, or cookbooks delivered right to your front door. Learn more and join now at kcrw.com/join.
I'm Evan Kleiman and you're listening to the Baja edition of Good Food. I'm in the Valle de Guadalupe, which is the wine valley that's right next to Ensenada. I'm in the Campestre, that is part of the noted chef Benito Molina's empire. Hi, Benito.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Could you set the scene for us? Tell us where we are, what the views are like.
We are in the middle of the Guadalupe Valley. This is probably the most beautiful view from all of the other places. It has 180 degrees view of the vineyards. You have to walk through an olive grove to get here, and this will be our seventh season here in Silvestre.
So what does Silvestre mean? I know that you have a restaurant in Ensenada, a restaurant in Mexico City, and you're working on far-flung opportunities. But this is truly a seasonal restaurant.
Yes, we open from June to October, depending on the climate. It's open air. We only cook with a wood fire. There is no gas here. Everything is done over the wood fire and, of course, cold and warm appetizers and things like that.
It's such an extraordinary climate here, and the local products are, we're starting to learn on the other side of the border, pretty special. Is that what gave you the impetus to create such a great kind of wild place?
Well, I think that was part of the whole thing. You know, I've been here for 17 years, and since I got here day one, you know, all the product and fish and olive oil, the wine, I mean, it's every chef's dream come true, no? We have everything here together, so that's why they call it the Mexican Mediterranean. It's a Mediterranean climate that allows us to have all these fantastic things that are very similar to the Mediterranean.
And that are sort of legacies from the original missionaries who came through here.
Well, the olives and the vines, of course. But then, you know, I mean, they found in the in the cave paintings here, in the Baja paintings, they found abalone shells, they found gooey dog shells, clam shells. So, I mean, it has been consumed here for many years, the local things, you know, because the tribes that were here were nomads and they had to search for food. So they were moving all around for the food. So, yes, it does have a very big Spanish influence. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, it's thousands of years old of eating seafood here, too.
Could you describe your urban culinary style and sort of share what you like to do out here in contrast with what you do in the city?
I am not into foams or spheres or those things. For me, it's the ingredient that has to shine. No? And I always like that, to have the true flavors of the ingredients come out. My mother is from Campeche. My mother was from Campeche. So there is a very big influence in my food from southern Mexico. Here is like a lot of family style. We like to do big dishes in the middle of the table. Things like that. So it's, here is more down to earth, no? Not so fancy.
Do you roast whole animals?
We do suckling pigs a lot. It's a big success, the suckling pig, lechon in Spanish. Sometimes we do lamb. It changes. You know, that's the fun part too. You know, we play with what we have.
And have you connected with a group of ranchers and farmers in the immediate area who know you're doing this and who are happy to turn you on to some new ingredient that's ready?
Yes, of course. We work with La Villa del Valle. We work with Laja, with their greenhouse. You know, they have the whole things. The quail farm is right next to where we are. We get the quails from them, too. The lechones we get from Maniadero, which is south of Ensenada, but not that far. So, yeah, we play. And the house wine, the Manzanilla house wine, is called M3. It's from this vineyard.
So the thing I love about this valley is that, I mean, it's a wine valley. There's wine tourism, definitely, but it's very rustic compared to the more sort of slick wine areas of Europe and California. Who are the people who are coming out here to taste the wines and to stop and eat?
Well, we're getting a lot of Mexican tourism because, you know, I mean, the noise of the Guadalupe Valley and the wines from this area and the seafood from Ensenada has made it national way. You know, I mean, we get people from Yucatan, from Quintana Roo, Chiapas, Central Mexico, a lot of people from Monterrey, from Guadalajara, because it's become this cult thing, you know. The wine industry here in Mexico, it's the oldest in America, but, I mean, it suffered a lot, and it's a long story why there we have no wine industry in Mexico until very recent. I mean, I've been here 17 years, and when I got here, there were 9 wine labels. Today, there is over 400. So no other region of the world has grown so fast wine-wise as this area. Unfortunately, Americans are still afraid to come, so we don't see a lot of American tourists, but some wine lovers, some foodies, or Anthony Bourdain, we blew his mind. He just loved this place, you know, it was fantastic. Andrew Zimmer, same story. It's the noise is happening, and I mean, and it's a really safe area, as you can see. I mean, nothing happens here. People drink lots of wine, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say from a chef's point of view, it's a chef's dream. I mean, every chef that I know loves to cook outside and work with products that's, you know, you'd like bend your elbow and it's right there for you. It's sort of like being on vacation, doing what you love to do the best and sharing with people. There's nothing better than that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, all my chef friends from Mexico, they come here and they want to cry. It's like, why don't we have this, you know? It makes me laugh, you know? Now we're getting interns from other places in the world. I even have guys from the States who want to work here, so.
You have stagiaires coming to work out here where what we're looking at right now, there's basically just rocks and dirt.
Exactly.
That is so awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Visit Ensenada, please.
That was Chef Benito Molina. We've been talking from his open air Silvestre amid the vineyards of the Valle de Guadalupe near Ensenada. He's now open for the season. Just down the road from Benito Silvestre is La Escuelita, the wine school in the Valle. We stopped in to talk to Tomás Egli, director of the wine program here. Hi, Tomás.
Hi.
You know, when we first drove up here, of course, the first thing you notice when you drive up to the school is the extraordinary architecture, the design. It seems that there is a very deep culture here in this part of Baja to reuse and recycle, and that you have really taken that to heart in the design of the school. Could you talk a little bit about that for us?
Exactly. Recycling is very important. I think we need to teach, still need to teach people to do recycling. The recycling part has two purposes. On the one hand side, the aesthetic part, but on the other side, the material is also an isolation material. So it isolates and helps us to maintain under control the temperature and, well, and decoration. It looks nice and attracts your attention.
Describe a little bit of the materials that are used in the buildings.
We use used irrigation hoses, barrel staves from old barrels, empty wine bottles, box springs, filters from the olive press, and soon we'll use the barrel circles. Also, we've got a new building, for our coffee building. We've got a coffee toaster, so we will weld the circles on the surface, on the walls.
What's the history of the Squalita here? When did it start?
The Squalita started officially in 2004, when these two main buildings were purchased. It was an ancient olive oil factory. It was abandoned during many years, and then it was renovated to produce wine. There were a lot of wine growers which couldn't sell their grapes anymore. So we tried to convince them, instead of selling grapes, selling wine. And so we teach them how to produce wine. And now there are many wineries in the valley which started producing one barrel here. And now they've got their own winery, hundreds of barrels, and they are a formal wine producer.
You know, I sort of make the comparison to chef lineages. There seem to be these lineages of masters, people who teach, and then their students go on to found their own, in the case of chefs, restaurants. And it's the same with winemakers. Who are the students, the new students coming in now? Are they people who are middle-aged, people who are interested in changing their lives, or is there an influx of youth?
There is no rule. We hear what people have to say, why they want to take the course, and then we decide yes or not. There are 20-year-old persons, there are 60-year-old persons, men, women, students, lawyers, doctors, housewife. Really, there's no rule. We want to hear why they want to take the course, the wine course. And if we see, if we can understand the motivation or the reason, or can even help. For instance, there are a lot of people which have their own property, and they would like to plant or already planted some vineyard, and now they want to learn how to make their wine. So we teach them that there's one course per year, 4 Saturdays, and there you learn the theory. And the special thing about this course, and I think this course makes it unique in Mexico, there's a practical part. You produce your own wine. And since we don't want them to run a risk to invest too much money, and it's their first experience, and to be disappointed or to lose money, we'd like to make them produce in one barrel of wine. So in groups of 2 persons, they produce half a ton of grapes, which is enough to fill one barrel of wine and still to have some wine left to refill the barrel during the aging.
Once they've, let's say, graduated and you've tasted their wine, have you ever had the experience of having a team create a wine that is finer and more intriguing than you had expected, and you want to maintain a relationship with them and make sure that the promise they're showing is really yield something in the future?
Well, there are always some students which really surprise us. But we don't want to maintain relation with them. Our synonym is also an incubator of wine producers, of new wine producers. We help them to get born and to walk on their own. But then, like with your child, with your children, you let them go. Let them go out of the house and live their own life, to have their own career.
Are most of your students pulled from the local area?
No, not at all. We had people from Los Angeles coming down here. We had people from Mexico City flying every Friday into Ensenada, taking the lesson on Saturday and flying back Sundays. So, or even from other cities. But Most people are from the triangle Tijuana, Ensenada, Mexicali.
So interesting. Most of us, when we learn new techniques and new styles, we first devote ourselves to getting good at those techniques and those styles. But then as we move and as we evolve, we try and personalize the styles, make something from the terroir or the land and our own personal palette to create a flavor, a structure. Most of your students, are they trying to really create an indigenous Mexican flavor profile, or is it sort of wildly personal?
Yeah, I think they're really, it's a wild experimenting phase. A lot of people ask, which is the most famous variety here in the valley? Because Argentina is famous for its Malbec, and the Burgundy for its Pinot Noir. But I think we couldn't really define which is the best variety here in the valley. I think there's hardly any region which has so many, sometimes crazy blends as here. Because the good thing about here is that there is no tradition. There's still no tradition, so the way is open for innovation. Maybe in 20 years it will be the other way around, because innovation and tradition goes hand in hand. But now we are still in the dynamic phase of experimenting, and there are always a lot of surprises, some good ones, some rather not as good.
Thank you so much, Tomás.
Thank you very much.
That was Tomás Egli, director of La Escuelita, the wine school here in the Valle de Guadalupe. We'll have photos of the totally distinctive, amazing, very unusual architecture here on the Good Food blog. Now, we're going to drive just a short distance to visit with local winemaker Victor Segura, the winemaker at Las Nubes. I'm in the barrel room of Las Nubes with winemaker Victor Segura. Hi, Victor.
Hi. Thank you for coming.
I'm so happy to be here. It's a really interesting and impressive property. But I'm very, very curious. Did you grow up in a winemaking family? How did you come to this particular occupation?
No, I grew up in a farm city, Ciudad Obregón, that is south of in the south part of Sonora. It's a huge farm area, but never on the wine business or the vine culture. Here in Ensenada, I learned everything about the wines, the local wines, and the way they were produced. And my major was in food engineering, so I decided to go for enology at my old age and get involved in this beautiful business that is the winemaking.
But what was your living that you had during most of your life? You weren't making wine. You weren't down in the family's farm. What were you doing?
Seafood. I was involved in the seafood process, from catching it and boats, different things. And I always love to be outside. I love to be in the nature and the enjoying fish camps and all these things. And when I have the chance to start this business, for me, was a part of my life, to work and on the field.
So how did you go about re-educating yourself? Did you attend a school here in the valley?
Not in the valley, but in Ensenada, we have an enology school, and I attended there. So it was not difficult for me, because I got my major in food engineering, and it was an easy transition.
You're one of about 50 winemakers, I understand, here in the valley who make around 400 or so different labels. What are the varieties of wines that you're working with?
I'm working a lot with the local, the old vines and the easy to grow grapes in the valley. My feeling is they are pretty good. It's Grenache, Carignan, Tempranillo, Nebbiolo. Thanks to God, in Mexico, it's so young, the knowledge of wine. Yeah, we have import wines and produce wines for many, many years. But now it's a new culture, the one making, and also the interest of the people, in mainly young people. I'm talking about 30 to 40-year-old demographic. The new buyers are interested in the Mexican wine.
We hear so much now in the States about this trend towards natural winemaking. What are your feelings about that, and what is generally going on here in the Valley?
The new offers about organic farming, also natural yeast fermentations. It's not our case. I use a special yeast for each grape, but at the same time, everybody's working in that way. Be more natural, and once again, we are talking about the product, on the wines, on the food, everything that is be as natural as possible. And it's like we're going backwards in our way of living. It's this slow movement, or slow food movement, is tremendous in Baja.
So, Victor, if I wanted to buy a bottle of wine from you and take it home across the border, how many bottles could I take?
You can take 1 liter. That's it. Even though we have a free trade agreement with the United States, the problem is California does not allow you to take more than a liter. But if you live in Arizona, you can take up to 60 bottles. Believe me, I don't understand how can one state protect an industry that we are so small compared with California. I think only one producer from California produces as much as every winery here in Baja. We are so small companies that we cannot damage the California business. It's my feeling.
Is there a huge markup of wine here in Mexico?
Yeah, we have a very huge percentage of taxes in Mexico. We have two different taxes. It's the production of wine, that is 25%, plus the sale tax, that is 16%, if we sell in domestic, in mainland market. That's 45%. If you put both together, it's a 45% markup that we are suffering at this moment.
So it actually would be better for you to market your wines to Southern Californians than to people who live in Mexico City?
Yes, because that way we don't need to pay the taxes. Only we need to pay the California taxes. They will be cheaper for us to export to instead of sending to Mexico City. And we are 3 hours, 4 hours from the main market is Los Angeles or San Diego or any place.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you for coming again.
You can taste Victor's wine on your next trip to the Valle de Guadalupe, but we do have a list of Baja wines available for sale in Southern California on the Good Food blog, so don't feel like you're missing out. You can also see tons of photos from the trip and a rundown of all the places we visited.
Good Food is produced by KCRW, a listener-supported public radio station. Search for KCRW in the podcast section of iTunes to find other programs like Bookworm, The Treatment, The Business, Unfictional, and DNA. And thanks for listening.
After 2 days in Baja California, we're back in the KCRW studio with a familiar face, Jonathan Gold. You know him as the Pulitzer Prize-winning food writer for the LA Times and our resident restaurant critic here on Good Food. In keeping with the Mexican theme, today we're visiting Taco Maria in Orange County.
Which is not a taqueria, though it sounds a lot like one. It's a sort of beautiful small restaurant run by Carlos Salgado, who's worked at sort of high-end restaurants in the Bay Area, including Qua, and came down here a couple of years ago to strike out in a taco truck.
Yeah, but even the taco truck, when you walked up, you didn't get what you were expecting.
No, it's definitely a different kind of taco truck. When I reviewed this a few weeks ago, I got an enraged letter from a reader, incensed that I was trying to associate Orange County with taco trucks because they're not that kind of people. Well, they should be that kind of people.
And actually, they are that kind of. Perhaps this person is not that kind of person.
Yeah.
There are a lot of great taco trucks in Orange County.
There are. I know you've been to a lot of them, including that one serving that battleship taco big enough to feed like 6 people.
Right. But what Carlos is doing is something quite special, I think.
It's a tasty menu restaurant. four courses for about $50, maybe $51, $52, and very, very seasonal and using a lot of modernist techniques. And if you're going there expecting to see a bunch of guys like sweating over a grill, it's actually sort of quiet and you see people with tweezers hunched over boxes of herbs and flowers.
Okay, so take me through the menu.
It's four courses and you get your choice between a couple courses. So there's like a beautiful one of like beets with citrus, quinoa, which has been somehow toasted to resemble buttered popcorn in every single possible way, and little fronds of dill. And roasted beets do not sound exciting. These roasted beets are really exciting. There's aguachile, which is the spicy sort of central Mexican ceviche of citrus and very fresh fish and lots of chilies. And he usually does it with kampachi, you know, the Japanese fish with sort of a firm, oily-ish texture. But the best time ever was when he got some those chocolate clams.
Wow.
From Baja. And my regret was it was not a shareable dish. So I got one molecule of Lori's and I kept staring at it for the rest of the meal.
You should have just commandeered the whole thing.
I should have. There's a sopa de chicharrón, which is more of a like asparagus velouté, I guess, that is topped with pork rinds. The garnish of kings, really. There's sometimes some crab in there. There's usually some avocado in there. It's the kind of place where they bring out the plate with all the garnishes and then they pour the soup carefully over it.
So you can really see the prettiness.
Yes, it's a very pretty, festive, light restaurant. Probably the dish that he's going to be famous for in 5 years is his chorizo. And you may think you've had chorizo, and I'm sure you have, but he does it with different kinds of mushrooms, some, you know, regular button mushrooms, some shiitake, some other things that he cooks down. He mixes with chorizo herbs and spices and sort of spreads out into a patty on the plate, which he tops with a single roasted potato, a poached egg, and just a little spritz of a tomatillo salsa to give it some acid.
This food sounds incredible.
It's so good. And if you didn't know it was mushrooms, actually, you would just think it was sausage and you'd power through it. But then when you realize it's mushrooms, you sense the, you know, thousand little things of texture that are going on within the mushroom sausage. He will actually go and make almost all of his menu vegetarian if you are so inclined. It's a good place to bring your vegetarian friends, even though the menu as such isn't vegetarian. They're happy to accommodate. And for the end, for the meat course, there are usually a couple of choices. Maybe the best one I've had was the crisp-skinned guinea fowl that was roasted and sort of kept at a nice temperature and served with a really complex, dark, bitter mole sauce.
How incredible.
At lunchtime, they have a menu of tacos, including some of the things I talked about, including the chorizo with tortillas that are padded to order. And I think he does his own nixtamal. I'm not sure. They're very weird, uneven-looking, but completely delicious tacos.
Definitely this sounds like it's worth a trip to Orange County. First of all, it's just four courses.
Four courses.
Which is doable and drive back.
They're four small courses, and they have a small but serviceable wine list, including a lot of natural things. I mean, if you thought that it would be difficult to find a Croatian orange wine in a Mexican restaurant, well, you'd be wrong.
Wow.
They have more normal things, too. And what you would drink is the absolutely killer Michelada, really spicy and really umami intensive.
I can't believe it took you this long to get to the Michelada.
I'm sorry. I should have been thirstier. And there is a really good coffee roaster in the mall, Portola, who sometimes calls themselves the El Bulli of the coffee world. I recommend you go there for a stiff espresso after dinner.
After dinner. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Jonathan Gold about Taco Maria, the brick-and-mortar outpost from Chef Carlos Salgado in Costa Mesa. You can get a text message with the restaurant's address by texting Good Food to 69866. Just text the words Good Food to 69866. Plus, check out the Good Food restaurant map where you can find all of Jonathan's restaurant recommendations. Before I go, I want to give a very big thanks to my Baja travel companions, especially to writer Bill Esparza. You can find him at streetgourmetla.com. You can also find him on Los Angeles Magazine's Digest blog, where he writes the Vitamin T column. If you're thinking about taking a trip to Baja this summer season, check out our blog for more tips and photos. We had a fantastic time. If you missed any part of today's show, you know what to do. All of our shows are archived at kcrw.com or via iTunes. You can also find Good Food on demand via KCRW smartphone apps. Thanks to the Good Food team, including Jillian Ferguson, who produced the bulk of today's show from the road in Baja. I'm Evan Kleinman. Join me back here next week for another edition of Good Food.